13. Know your enemy. The intelligence strategy. The target of your strategy should be less the army you face than the mind of the man or woman who runs it. If you understand how that mind works, you have the key to deceiving and controlling it. Train yourself to read people, picking up the signals they unconsciously send about their innermost thoughts and intentions. A friendly front will let you watch them closely and mine them for information. Beware of projecting your own emotions and mental habits onto them. Try to think as they think. By finding your opponent's psychological weaknesses, you can work to unhinge their minds. The Mirrored Enemy. In June 1838, Lord Auckland, the British Governor General of India, called a meeting of his top officials to discuss a proposed invasion of Afghanistan. Auckland and other British ministers had become increasingly concerned at Russia's growing influence in the area. The Russians had already made an ally of Persia. They were now trying to do the same with Afghanistan. And if they were successful, the British in India would find themselves potentially cut off by land to the west and vulnerable to more incursions by the Russians. Instead of trying to outdo the Russians and negotiate an alliance with the Afghan ruler, Dost Mohammed, Auckland proposed what he thought was a surer solution: invade Afghanistan and install a new ruler, Shah Shuja, a former Afghan leader forced out of power 25 years earlier, who would then be indebted to the English. Among the men listening to Auckland that day was William Macnaghten, the 45-year-old chief secretary of the Calcutta government. Macnaghten thought the invasion a brilliant idea. A friendly Afghanistan would secure British interests in the area and even help to spread British influence. And the invasion could hardly fail. The British army would have no trouble sweeping away the primitive Afghan tribesmen. They would present themselves as liberators, freeing the Afghans from Russian tyranny, and bringing to the country the support and civilizing influence of England. As soon as Shah Shuja was in power, the army would leave, so that British influence over the grateful Shah, although powerful, would be invisible to the Afghan public. When it came time for Macnaghten to give his opinion on the proposed invasion, his support of it was so sound and enthusiastic that Lord Auckland not only decided to go ahead, he named Macnaghten the Queen's envoy to Kabul, the Afghan capital, the top British representative in Afghanistan. Meeting little resistance along the way, in August 1839, the British army reached Kabul. Dost Mohammed fled to the mountains, and the Shah re-entered the city. To the local inhabitants, this was a strange sight. Shah Shuja, whom many could barely remember, looked old and submissive alongside Macnaghten, who rode into Kabul wearing a bright-colored uniform topped by a cocked hat fringed with ostrich feathers. Why had these people come? What were they doing here? With the Shah back in power, Macnaghten had to reassess the situation. Reports came in informing him that Dost Mohammed was building an army in the mountains to the north. Meanwhile, to the south, it seemed that in invading the country, the British had insulted some local chieftains by plundering their lands for food. These chiefs were now stirring up trouble. It was also clear that the Shah was unpopular with his former subjects, so unpopular that Macnaghten could not leave him and other British interests in the country unprotected. Reluctantly, Macnaghten ordered most of the British army to remain in Afghanistan until the situation was stabilized. Time went by, and eventually Macnaghten decided to allow the officers and soldiers of this increasingly long-standing occupying force to send for their families so that life would be less harsh for them. Soon, the wives and children came, along with their Indian servants. But where Macnaghten had imagined that the arrival of the soldiers' families would have a humanizing, civilizing effect, it only alarmed the Afghans. Were the British planning a permanent occupation? Everywhere the local people looked, there were representatives of British interests, talking loudly in the streets, drinking wine, attending theaters and horse races, strange imported pleasures that they had introduced to the country. Now their families were making themselves at home. A hatred of everything English began to take root. There were those who warned McNaughton about this, and to all of them he had the same answer. Everything would be forgotten and forgiven when the army left Afghanistan. The Afghans were childlike, emotional people. Once they felt the benefits of English civilization, they would be more than grateful. One matter, however, did worry the envoy. The British government was unhappy about the increasing expense of the occupation. McNaughton would have to do something to cut costs, and he knew just where to begin.